This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, this is an amazing program. Thousands of African migrants who are facing rape and torture and violence in Libyan detention centers are actually giving up hope of ever reaching Europe, and they're taking advantage of a program that's being offered by the International Organization for Migration to actually send them home.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, military vehicles were reported to be heading toward Zimbabwe's capital today, a day after the army chief warned he would step in to ease political tensions. And Kenya's Supreme Court begins its review of petitions challenging last month's election. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, military vehicles were reported to be heading towards Zimbabwe's capital today, a day after the army chief warned he would step in to ease political tensions sparked by firing the vice president. It's not clear whether the reported movements by tanks and armored personnel carriers were routine. And we have in our studio with us live Gibbs Dube, who has been following developments. And thank you so much for joining us today, Gibbs.
Thank you very much.
What can you tell us about this situation in Harare?
Now, the situation definitely is very interesting that there is such a thing in Zimbabwe. You know, whenever there are some military exercises, like what the military is claiming, you know, it happens at a time when, you know, people are guessing what is going to happen to the president after, you know, Chiwenga said what he said yesterday. So in any case, what we're seeing is some maneuver by the military. We can't say whether these people are supporting, you know, the president or Mr. Mnangagwa. So at the end of the day, it's just some speculative issues that we're looking at.
What are people on the ground saying? What's the atmosphere like?
Now, when we talk to some guys in the Central Intelligence Organization, which is the spy agency, they were saying, actually, you know, these people are doing a routine military drill. And then common people were actually saying, no, it appears as if it's something to do with what Chiwenga was saying yesterday. And in the capital city, they're saying the situation is calm, but remember that these military personnel are coming from a military barrack that is about 80 kilometers outside Harare. It is a military barrack that is known as a place where, you know, there's always peace. But now, all of a sudden, with the army just moving up and down, people are a little bit scared that maybe something bad is going to happen to them.
Are there any security alerts, or is there a state of emergency in place?
Not yet. We haven't had any state of emergency being declared in Zimbabwe. So far, so good. Everything appears to be calm, but you rarely get such kind of maneuvers by the military. So, but what is maybe getting our attention is whether Mr. Mugabe has got some people that are backing him, or the military is actually backing the sacked vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. So we're not quite certain there, but I think by the end of the day, we should be sure what is really taking place. But what we have seen is something that is unusual, because General Chiwenga has been baking the president for a long time, you know, praising Mr. Mugabe for being a revolutionary that he claims he is. And we've been seeing him as a very loyal person. But after he uttered what he uttered, we are not quite sure whether he really meant to say, I no longer support this guy, you know?
So at this point, it's just a matter of waiting to see what is going to happen.
Precisely. So it's a wait and see kind of situation, and we don't know where it is going. But, you know, anything can happen, you know, because in ZANU-PF, there are a lot of these pages, you know, because the president may be trying to bring his wife on board, maybe to be with the vice president representing women. And then maybe at a certain given stage, she may become the president. You never know. But the army is not happy because of Mr. Mugabe's background. The way he was brought into ZANU-PF was through the military. that is the ZANLA forces. Apparently, some other leaders had actually rejected him, like Samora Machel. He didn't like him. So, but the ZANLA forces said, no, we want this guy. So there was a declaration that was made, which made Mugabe to be the leader of ZANU-PF and ZANLA.
Okay, thank you so much, Gibbs, for keeping such a close watch on this story. And we'll continue to bring our audience the latest developments. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. In more developments around the continent, with a new G5 joint military force starting operations in the Sahel, security in Africa is drawing new global attention. Leaders of Mali, Rwanda, and Senegal, as well as French officials, have spent the past 2 days in Dakar discussing ways to lead the fight against extremists. VOA journalist Sophia Christensen was at the Dakar International Forum this week and speaks with Kate Pound Dawson about the conference.
So alongside Senegalese President Macky Sall, the meeting is attended by Ibrahim Aboubakar Keita of Mali, Rwanda's Paul Kagame, Chadian Prime Minister Albert Fahimi Patake, and French Minister of the Armed Forces Florence Parly. The rest of the participants include a range of political and military authorities, security experts, academics, diplomats, representatives of the international community, civil society, and the private sector.
What are the major security threats under discussion?
So terrorism and violent extremism are, of course, high on the agenda, with many discussions touching on the Boko Haram insurgency in the Lake Chad region and also the growing number of militant attacks in the Sahel. But then there are also discussions tackling issues such as piracy, cybersecurity threats, the illicit flow of arms, drug trafficking, irregular migration, and climate change.
When is the G5 joint force expected to be fully in place, and how will it change the security scenario?
So the G5 joint force launched its first military operation at the beginning of this month, and this is in an area that sits across the borders of Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. This is the first step, but it is not expected to be fully in place until early next year. At full capacity, the force aims to reach 5,000 men from 7 battalions made up of troops from Mali, Niger, Chad, Burkina Faso, and Mauritania.
What is the U.S. role, if any, to counter extremism and improve regional security?
So the U.S. plays, above everything, a supportive role in the region. They established the Trans-Saharan Counterterrorism Partnership in 2005, through which they provide intelligence training and financial support to African partners on the one hand, and then they also assist foreign allies such as France in their counterterrorism operations. A senior defense official I spoke to at the conference said the recent attack in Niger was an unfortunate incident, of course, but that it would not change the nature of the U.S.'s involvement.
That was journalist Sophia Christensen covering the Dakar International Forum on African Security. She was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. Kenya's Supreme Court begins its review of petitions challenging last month's election. With security forces surrounding the court today heard arguments on 3 complaints. The justices are expected to issue their ruling next Monday. 2 petitions, one filed by an opposition member and the other from a civil society group, argue that the October 26 election rerun is void. They say the results should be thrown out because the Election Commission failed to hold fresh nominations after the court ordered a rerun of the August vote. The 3rd petition argues that the opposition National Super Alliance should pay for the damage caused during weeks of protest ahead of the October vote. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta won the rerun election, which the opposition largely boycotted. Opposition leader Raila Odinga, who ran in August, sat out the October contest. Voters in Somaliland are awaiting the results of the breakaway republic's presidential election. Voting started early yesterday. Voters were deciding among 3 candidates competing to replace President Ahmed Mahmoud, who chose not to seek re-election. Somaliland's Electoral Commission said voting was mostly peaceful in all of the republic's 6 regions. Final results are not expected for several days. Somaliland, a former British colony, broke away from the rest of Somalia in 1991. 15 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, is helping to repatriate traumatized migrants in Libya back to 30 different countries through the Libyan Repatriation Program. 500 people are being sent back home each week, with Nigeria being the number one country for repatriation. IOM says so far this year, more than 10,000 migrants have been returned home. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about migrants who had given up their dream of seeking a better life in Europe after traumatic experiences on the road or in Libya detention facilities.
Well, this is an amazing program. Thousands of African migrants who are facing rape and torture and violence in Libyan detention centers are actually giving up hope of ever reaching Europe. And they're taking advantage of a program that's being offered by the International Organization for Migration to actually send them home. Now, more than 10,000 migrants from 30 different countries have accepted the offer of repatriation flights from Libya just this year. And that's happening at the rate of around 500 per week. Nigerians make up nearly half the number of people who are using this scheme, and it's outstripping all expectations. Now, we're expecting that number to go even higher before the end of the year. And this is quite remarkable because this scheme apparently started in 2015, and we had around 13,500 since 2015. But this year alone, these numbers have swollen to a lot more as migrants are just finding that the conditions in these Libyan centres are absolutely intolerable.
So that's basically why they're traumatised, is their living conditions?
Well, we know that the living conditions are horrendous because these people are being picked up on the streets, often against their will. They're being seized by militias and put into detention camps where they're beaten, starved, raped and tortured, often until their relatives can send funds to have them released. And this can go on for months, and it's of great concern to the United Nations. That's also why we've seen a drop in the numbers of migrants crossing the Mediterranean, because many of them are being held in these detention centres or being picked up by the Libyan Coast Guard and sent back to Libya before they can reach Europe.
Who else is working with the IOM on this repatriation?
Well, this is a UN-sponsored initiative, and it's interesting that today the UN Human Rights Chief, Zayed Raad al-Hussein, said that the European Union policy of assisting the Libyan Coast Guard to intercept these migrants and send them back to Libya before they're allowed to cross the Mediterranean was actually inhumane. And he said it was time for the international community to take action. It can no longer close its eyes to this suffering that's going on in Libya, which he said was an outrage on the conscience of humanity.
You had mentioned that Nigeria is one of the main countries, or the main country, that migrants are going back to. What other countries are some of the big countries involved?
Yes, more than 4,000 migrants from Nigeria have taken advantage of this scheme to return home. And some of them actually receive a small grant to help them, in some cases, even start their own businesses once they get back home, which is fantastic. But there are flights being offered to migrants from 30 countries, and some of the others are going back to Gambia, Mali, Ethiopia, and other countries in Africa and Asia as well. So it's quite a functioning operational scheme that is really offering hope to these migrants who no longer feel that there is a positive future or hope of actually reaching Europe as they had planned. And incidentally, the UN monitors in Libya are telling the United Nations they're absolutely shocked by what they're seeing. Thousands of emaciated and traumatized men, women and children, often crammed into small spaces, into warehouses and hangars, without even the most basic necessities stripped of their dignity. So this is certainly an issue that the United Nations feels that European countries must confront instead of just turning a blind eye and leaving these migrants here in these centres.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. Human rights activists are criticizing President Donald Trump for failing to press Asian leaders on rights abuses during his five-nation swing through East Asia. VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein reports the issue came to a head during Trump's final stop in the Philippines.
Protesters clashed with Manila riot police and burned effigies of Donald Trump Monday as the U.S. leader met Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte on the sidelines of a regional summit.
We believe that the meeting will not bring any benefits for the Filipino people, but would rather worsen the human rights situation.
Inside the summit hall, Trump avoided human rights, instead emphasizing regional harmony.
We want our partners in the region to be strong, independent, and prosperous, in control of their own destinies, and satellites to no one. These are the principles behind our vision for a free and open Indo-Pacific.
There were conflicting reports about whether Trump and his Philippine host talked about the touchy subject of the extrajudicial killings that are part of Duterte's war against drugs, which human rights groups say are crimes against humanity. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said human rights came up briefly in the context of Duterte's anti-drug campaign. A Philippine government spokesman said the opposite.
There was no mention of human rights. There was no mention of extralegal killings. There was only a rather lengthy discussion about the Philippine war on drugs, with President Duterte doing most of the explaining.
When a reporter tried to ask the question during a photo opportunity, he was abruptly cut off. Trump's policy of avoiding uncomfortable topics such as human rights in public has provoked a harsh social media backlash, including from his Republican Party nemesis, Senator John McCain, who tweeted, "And human rights obviously not a priority in POTUS's meeting with Duterte. Again, sad."
Failing to raise human rights emboldens abusive leaders. So make no mistake, you know, governments like Vietnam and Cambodia, they see the world's inaction in the face of their increasing persecution of dissidents and other things, and they are encouraged by it, and it allows them to be even more aggressive in cracking down.
After 12 days of pomp and ceremony, honor guards, state dinners, and toasts to a brighter future, Trump heads home, hailing progress on North Korea and trade, but leaving his administration's human rights critics unsatisfied. Peter Heinlein, VOA News, The White House.
Cameroon's plans to more than double its cocoa production by 2020 may be in jeopardy. Farmers say tumbling world market prices are discouraging them from planting new crops, as we hear from VOA's Interviki Divine Jr. in Douala.
Cameroon currently is the world's fifth largest producer of cocoa, which also accounts for 3% of the country's gross domestic product. But there are growing fears the West African nation, whose cocoa bean harvests peaked at 270,000 tons in the 2016-2017 season, may witness a decline in production. The country's roughly 600,000 growers have watched market prices slump by half in 1 year, a situation blamed on world market oversupply. Julius Fombe is a dealer based in the country's southwest.
The drop in the price from the world markets has really affected the business, in that most of the farmers have been discouraged, because now with the drop in price, they consider that what they get from their farm and then come and sell, the money they will get cannot really do what they were supposed to do.
Because across Cameroon, cocoa beans currently sell at about 900 CFA francs per kilogram, about $1.6 US and down from close to $3 US at the same period last year. Njie Emmanuel, a plantation owner in the southwest, says the country's cocoa future is currently bleak.
Precisely as we are talking now, we are in Muyuka town. The last sales I did, the price shows that it has dropped. Actually, it is too bad as compared to the prices of the previous year.
growers say they are worried, especially considering that no one can tell with certainty for how long prices will keep plunging.
Putting everything together, the clearing of the farm, hiring of labor for spraying, the pruning, harvesting, drying, and all other works, put all those expenditures together, that price is not the best. It affects us seriously.
Meantime, Cameroon is in the third year of implementing a strategy to increase annual harvests to more than 600,000 tons by 2020. The plan, launched in September 2014, includes the free distribution of fertilizers and pesticides. The government and sector development organizations also plan to create new plantations of 100,000 hectares yearly. However, reports from the Cocoa Development Corporation, SODECAO, indicate that only about 3,500 hectares of new plantations have been set up yearly ever since as a result of funding failures. Nevertheless, Trade Minister Luc Magloire Atanganambarga says there is hope in the horizon.
I have a message of confidence in the future. We are supporting the cocoa growers. We need now to make more effort.
At the Ministry of Trade, officials are creating measures to cushion the impact of the price slump. Among them are plans to step up the country's cocoa beans processing capacity, which at the moment stands at barely 25%, according to figures from the National Cocoa and Coffee Board. In early August, Trade Minister Luc Magloire Atanganambarga announced a 50% slash on export duties per kilogram of cocoa from 150 to 75 CFA francs, that's about $13. The measure is intended to boost revenues for growers and exporters hit by the dip in global prices and will also contribute to the ongoing purchase of 1,800 modern cocoa drying ovens. Reporting for VOA News, I'm Tariq Edovan Jr. in Douala, Cameroon.
That wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.